Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. As we look through Milwaukee's connection to the food economy in Wisconsin, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the beer industry. From the beer that made Milwaukee famous to the brand that graces the Brewers Ballpark, these breweries have contributed not just to the culture of the city, but also our economic growth. After all, Wisconsin ranks sixth nationwide for the total number of food and beverage manufacturing establishments, including 78 for beverages alone. Here in the Milwaukee area, breweries account for six of the region's 15 beverage manufacturers. And of course, the big gun in that group is Miller Coors, which yearly ranks among the country's top food manufacturers. Since we're taking a bit of a historic perspective on Milwaukee and Wisconsin's relationship to food today, we're going to back up a bit and speak with two beer historians. Leonard Jurgensen has the nation's largest private collection of Schlitz memorabilia and is the company's unofficial historian. He's recently teamed up with Kevin Cullen to present Legacies of Milwaukee Brewing tours about each of Milwaukee's neighborhoods. Cullen is an archaeologist and educator at Discovery World and also teaches a course on Ale Through the Ages, the Anthropology and Archaeology of Brewing. Together, they're trying to highlight the city's archaeological brewing past and correct some of the misinformation about the history of the city's beer industry. They joined Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce to talk about Milwaukee's brewing history, and Jurgensen explains first why there was so much demand for beer to begin with.
The interesting thing is that in the mid-1880s, what was safe to drink? Could you really trust well water? People were getting sick. Could you trust cow's milk? Could you trust goat's milk? This is before pasteurization. You really couldn't trust anything as far as purity, but when a beer is brewed, it comes to a boil, and all the impurities in that beer is killed by boiling it. So the only safe beverage or liquid to drink in the early days was beer, because it was boiled and in the process of being brewed. And it was recommended to be consumed by children and pregnant women. And if you had health problems, your doctor recommended. It was a staple of life. It was the only safe thing to drink. And in some of these small areas in Wisconsin that had these small breweries, we're looking at the production of these operations and the population of some of these small communities. And it's my opinion, without being a comedian, is that they drank this three times a day, and on Sunday they had to take a bath in it because they consumed so much beer. At one time, the Schlitz Brewing Company bragged that in storage, in their lagering tanks, they had enough beer to provide every man, woman, and child in the country two glasses of beer.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. It's amazing what Milwaukee was then and what it is today.
The basic question, I think, still remains and still gets asked today. Why was Milwaukee just a breeding ground for breweries in the 19th century? And what kind of misinformation is out there about why they came here?
Well, the real factor in Milwaukee becoming a capital of brewing was the fact that it had a large German population. And their beverage of choice was beer and lager beer. And the second factor in it was hillside sites where they could dig cellars and store beer. Blatz was built on a hillside. Schlitz was built on a hillside. Pabst was all built on a hillside. The reason for that, in the early days, they dug cellars in these hillsides and they could store beer underground. The second factor was access to ice, meaning they could get ice from the rivers. They never harvested ice from the lake, nor did they use lake water for brewing, but they used river ice, and they had either wells or they had other sources of water. The next big factor was the railroads, but the biggest factor of all was the fact that Chicago had a lot of breweries, much larger breweries than Milwaukee, but the Great Chicago Fire of 1871 destroyed all of the breweries, including their waterworks. That was a huge factor in Milwaukee becoming successful as the brewing capital of the world.
And that's so interesting, because you never really hear that cited as one of the reasons.
That's what made Schlitz famous, right?
The beer that made that's what started their slogan.
Right.
The beer that made Milwaukee famous was derived from the Great Chicago Fire. But it's interesting. I don't know how many breweries you could name or the general public could name. Maybe you could name 10 or 15 if you're really lucky. But they brewed beer in Milwaukee at 115 different locations if you factor in the handful of microbreweries and brew pubs. 115 locations where they brewed beer, and I've documented every single location.
What are some of the ones that you feature on the tour that maybe people are surprised to learn about?
Which way? Should we start with downtown?
We can start with downtown.
Well, there's one of the most recent, and this is another reason I should mention that the tour is of importance, is because we have these historic sites, and many of them have just been recently torn down, structures that have been demolished. And so part of it is historic preservation. So one of the most recent one was the Gipfel Brewery, and that was, some people may remember, it was relocated to Old World 3rd Street. It was basically in the parking lot of what was what is now the Bradley Center. You know, that was the front saloon of what was the Gipfel Brewery, and that was, I believe, 1860s when it started up. Even earlier, actually, 1840s is when they purchased the property.
1849.
So, and then, you know, this was also a corridor along what is now Juneau, was Chestnut Street, and that was basically Brewer's Row. There was several breweries along there. You know, there's the Obermann Brewery, which is on 5th and Cherry, which became the Young Brewing Company, J-U-N-G. So, you know, some of the other ones downtown, we got the Ogden Brewery, which functioned basically very close to the Blatt's Brewing Company. There's by Discovery World, there's the Owens Brewing Company. It was originally called the Milwaukee Brewery, and then the Lake Brewery, and then eventually it became known as kind of Owens, Richard Owens. He was a Welsh man, and he started, and that's actually, here's a bit of the misinformation, and it wasn't until Leonard sort of showed me the proof in the pudding when he showed me the actual deed for the site. This is basically downtown on Michigan where it hits Lincoln Memorial Drive. It's now the Milwaukee County Transit bus garage. Most information attributes that as the first brewery in Milwaukee in 1840. Now, having seen the deed, it's actually not until 1841 that these guys, Owens, Prolet, and Davis, take it over in 1841. So it's not, in fact, the first brewery, but it's certainly one of the earliest. It was an ale brewery. But yeah, it turns out we went to the original site of the oldest brewery on the South Side tour in September. And that's Simon Ruthelshofer, and that was the German brewery. And that's basically, what is that? Is that Florida and Third?
Third in Virginia.
Virginia, yeah.
It appears, though, that most of the early written histories on Milwaukee breweries are either oral histories or assumptions or conclusions that somebody came to. And these histories have been published again and again and again. And then in recent times, when some of our more recent authors have done research, they just copy this information, never bothering to check deed of property records or court records or probate records, never bother to verify the information that has been published over and over again.
At what point did some of these companies start going national?
The big factor national was pasteurization. Before that, they would ship beer in kegs, and they would ship them in railroad cars, which were iced. And they'd have to have ice depots all across the country. The further they shipped them, the more ice depots they would have to have. And they would have to constantly ice those boxcars to keep that beer cold and keep it from spoiling. When pasteurization was discovered in the 1870s, they could pasteurize beer in bottles and ship it any part of the country or any part of the world because it didn't have to be refrigerated. Pasteurization was a big factor in Milwaukee becoming a national hub for breweries.
Well, let me ask about the impact that all of these breweries, this brewing industry, had on Milwaukee and southeastern Wisconsin. I mean, what did it bring in terms of jobs for the people who were living here?
Well, I think you could talk to relatives, or especially older relatives. Either you had a close relative, an uncle or a cousin. Everybody either had a family member or had a distant family member that worked at one of the breweries. So as far as job was concerned, yeah, it had a great impact on Milwaukee. And as far as industry, when you think of beer, it's just not the beer itself. It's the packaging industry, the shipping industry, the glass manufacturing. Milwaukee was a hub for glass manufacturing. Several of the largest glass plants were located in Milwaukee, south side of Milwaukee. So you have to just look at it more than beer. It's all the supporting industry between transportation, packaging, and marketing that supported the beer industry and that created these jobs. Unfortunately, we're down to one major brewery, Miller Coors.
And so a lot of those attendant industries have disappeared?
Well, have disappeared or have moved elsewhere.
There is a huge impact economically on the city. We're seeing it kind of certainly still with the Miller Coors Brewing Company. I didn't even know what the number is of employees they have. But you mentioned the good point, like with the industry and the associated industries of the brewing industry. There's the cooperages. You have all of the brewania that we have still today that people collect, you know, whether it's glasses or lampshades. It covers quite a range of specialized industries that also play catered into these particular breweries.
What led to the decline of many of these breweries that you featured on this tour?
Three factors. First of all, many of them were just experts in brewing beer, but financially were very bad at handling their financial assets. Many of them borrowed money in the fall to be able to brew beer at very high interest rates and really couldn't pay those loans, and then borrowed a second loan and a third loan and got so deep in debt and lost their brewery through foreclosure. Another factor was fires. A lot of these breweries had malting plants, and when you have a malt plant, you're roasting malt, and there's a fire 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. A lot of them were lost through fire, and several of them were lost through mergers. And eventually, what really happened towards the end, and when I mentioned pasteurization, those larger breweries that could afford to construct a bottling plant and purchase pasteurization equipment had a leg up on everybody else. And if you didn't bottle beer and if you didn't pasteurize beer, you were left in the dust, and eventually you went under.
I also mentioned probably Prohibition did a lot of them under too, at least those that survived the 19th century into the early 20th century. And of course, that lasted until 1933. You know, some of them were entrepreneurial enough to be able to, you know, do things other than brew alcoholic beverages. So that was a major factor, I think. But several of them, the larger ones, did survive that stint of American history. The most breweries at one time, I think in Milwaukee, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it's about 20 or so. It was the 1860s.
I would say just over 30, before the Civil War.
Yeah. And then, there's a tremendous amount of competition. You get merger, as Leonard was saying. And then, yeah, we have, you know, now quite a wellspring of microbreweries springing up again. I think it's a different type of economic mission, I'd say, a lot of these breweries have constructed for themselves, where they're not necessarily planning to be titans of industry, but providing a very good product that's local. And I think that kind of speaks to a broader kind of economic movement in this country, too.
Where do you think that the microbrewery movement has come from? Obviously, you know, Milwaukee, in terms of what's produced here, has gone through such a shift going from the 70s through the 80s to today. Where does this refocus on beer come mm-hmm. from?
Well, there's nothing new about a brew pub or a microbrewery. Most of these early breweries started out as saloons and sample rooms. Those that started out as a saloon found out that it was more economical to brew their own beer, and eventually they found out that it was more profitable to just brew beer and close their sample room or saloon. But a great many of them started out as what we would call today brew pubs. So this is nothing new as far as a phenomenon.
But as far as where, I mean, overall, I think maybe part of it is, you know, there's a beer culture out there that has wants more refined tastes, want of more of a variety of tastes. Oftentimes what happens, the larger you become as a brewery, you compromise often ingredients for marketing and other things. And so the flavor and variety of the beer tends to be diluted. And what microbreweries have offered, and really starting in the 1980s, and let's say this newer revolution of the brew pub, really kind of stemmed out of the Northwest and Colorado and California, and so sort of moved into this region. And that's why when you get Lakefront Brewery and the Milwaukee Brewing Company and Randy Sprecher at Sprecher Brewing Company, I mean, these are like late 80s kind of rebirths of this older type of industry. But I think it really does speak to the better ingredients, or let's say more flavors are coming in through and packed into a smaller quantity, tends to, you know, render a product that, you know, let's say the younger generation of this beer culture wants. And so, you know, the when Schlitz changed to their, you know, their, I guess, 1970s formula, and now going back to their 60s formula, you know, that also speaks to that, you know, wanting to add a little bit more of this flavor profile in there that sort of had previously been diluted post-World War II.
Well, Leonard Jurgensen and Kevin Cullen, thank you both so much again.
Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Brewery historian Leonard Jurgensen owns the largest private collection of Schlitz memorabilia in the country. Kevin Cullen is an archaeologist and educator at Discovery World in Milwaukee. He helps run the museum's Distant Mirror Archaeology Program and blog and teaches the Ale Through the Ages courses. Cullen and Jurgensen lead the museum's Legacies of Milwaukee brewing tours around the city. They spoke with Stephanie Lecce. Keep listening next on the program, The History of Wisconsin's Eating Traditions. It's Lake Effect on WUWM.